In this special episode of Because It Matters, we're back at Dublin's iconic Croke Park. David Winston from DW Architects and Jerry Staunton from Dormakaba share how design vision and access expertise come together to shape buildings that truly serve people. From seamless transitions and user-centered spaces to innovative automatic door systems, they reveal why the future of architecture is about sustainability, inclusivity, and comfort. Join our host, Wilma Werner, as we dive into the world of safe, secure, and seamless access.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Because It Matters, the podcast where we open the doors to innovation, merge aesthetic with function, and security with elegance. And by my side, in this wonderful stadium in Dublin, the Croke Park, are Jerry Staunton and David Winston. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And I'm going to share that with the audience, and I hope you're watching the video version of it. Both of you, you entered the room together, and I had the feeling that you've known each other for quite a while. Is that true?
That's very true, yeah. We've come together through football, Gaelic football here in Ireland.
That's Gaelic football even. That's what Gaelic, they play here in Croke Park.
Correct. Yeah,
the home of Gaelic football.
The home of Gaelic football. So yeah, that's where absolutely. You met. And yeah. Then what happened from there in the love story?
I'm talking probably about, say, is it about 20 years now we've been?
About 20 years. We know each other,
you know, so yeah. I mean, we were... A lot younger. Well, I was a lot younger.
No, that's not true.
We were both 20 years younger.
We were great footballers, you know, really, really good footballers. I was probably better than David, you know, but he'd say differently. But we've known a long time. We played in the same teams, but now our kids are actually involved in the club as well. The same club. Uh-huh. It's in North Dublin. It's Ballymun Kickhams, which we have to get a mention of that as well. So, but David's kids are. In the juvenile section.
It's
in different sections. Yeah. So we've nursery, juvenile, and then adult. Uh-huh. So and my kids are a little bit older. So I've got one son playing. He's playing intermediate football for the club, mm-hmm. and then my daughter plays ladies football for the club.
And then, so you met through Gaelic football, and then you cross paths.
Oh. Yeah, cross some friends and. David's brother-in-law actually would be a friend of mine as well. And we used to go away on weekends, what we would call the junior weekend, again, going back to the football as well. And we still go on them.
Years. There's a lot of elderly gentlemen or mature gentlemen who go on the junior weekend.
We call it the junior weekend.
Yeah, exactly that, yeah.
So, and that's how, like, that's really it, you know. So we just, you know, I think we've been away 4 or 5 times.
Yeah.
Different cities. Yeah, so stories that
so there's a lot of
today.
A lot of crossover between sport, friends, people who know family members, all connected back to the Gaelic Football Club, and then a spawn off. And then it's funny then as you get into your professional career, then you start to meet people around and make connections doubly, you know, from the Gaelic football and professionally then too. Mm.
And especially, I mean, how many people do still, how big is the community of people who actively play Gaelic football?
There's a question, right?
Yes, but it's quite a niche, isn't it? If you meet someone who plays, it's not like...
Gaelic football and hurling, which is the Gaelic games, is played in the most dominant sport in Ireland.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. A collection of sports. But it's a very open thing. If I move down to Kerry tomorrow... I could walk on up to the local club and I could train and play and no problem.
Oh, it's
everyone
that
can just interconnect with each other. Oh, okay. That's a great thing about it.
Okay. Mm. And now you even work together. Jerry, you're here for the Dormakaba side. David, you're here as our architect. Can you please briefly introduce yourself?
So my name is David Winston, as we said earlier, from DW Architects. I had... a huge interest in architecture from a young age and a huge interest in building, so through some family members. I progressed studies and I became a technologist first for 15 years, an architectural technologist. So it was a very technical side of architecture. And I continued my study in design development and registered as an architect then 8 years ago.
8 years ago. Yeah. And Jerry.
And I'm Jerry Staunton. I work with Dormakaba probably now just over 2 years. I work in the automatics end of it in terms of the swing door operators, sliding doors and revolving doors, speed gates, that type of thing as well. So my background will be I've been involved with with the building industry, oh, probably 30 years now at this stage. Now I'm showing my age. I worked with various from ironmongery, lever handles, door closers and that type of thing as well, and just progressed over the years. I went away for about 3 or 4 years, went into something completely different, and I'm back now with Dormacaba for, yeah, just over 2 years.
Mm-hmm. And are you both from the region, like geographically?
Geographically, for a number of the years that I grew up, you could, if you could see through that wall, I lived less than a kilometre that way.
That is very close. Yeah,
so quite close.
And if you look through that wall, 2 kilometres.
Really?
So
what does it mean for you, spending time here at Croke Park in Dublin?
Oh, it's great. When in my early years growing up in a community, Ballymun, north of the city, the club always brought the younger kids into Croke Park. So before it was like this, the original Croke Park, we'd come in a busload of kids and we'd go and watch all the games, and then we'd be celebrating on the way back, hopefully, if Dublin win. And then, you know, I living locally, I watched the park itself, Croke Park, be redeveloped over the years, which was a great thing to see too. So it's great to be here. To discuss this topic and to be in Croke Park to do it, you know.
Yeah. Especially in Croke Park. Yeah. Both of you, 1 kilometre that direction, 2 kilometres that direction.
Yeah.
And haven't moved. Yeah. Haven't moved for me anyway.
So you still live close by?
Yeah. I've moved probably from the family home, probably about 150 yards from where I'm living now.
Yeah.
Now, I did move away for a couple of years, but about 150 yards from my family home.
I do count in metres or kilometres, but I know that's not far.
It's not far. You know, my wife is the same. She's about 100 yards from her family
home. Into that direction?
Yeah, 2 kilometres that way. Yeah, we actually knew each other as we grew up, you know, so I'm going off track now, but
So, we have both of you true enthusiasts about Gaelic football. Both of you from Dublin, very, very close by. Still live nearby. Mm-hmm. And now we're here today talking about architecture.
Yeah.
So great to have both of you here.
Thank you.
David, you mentioned that you basically knew early on that you would be an architect because a lot of your family members are architects as well.
So involved in construction, involved in design, involved in, I suppose, realizing a vision, which is great, you know. So I knew that this was the direction that I wanted to go. Now, achieving that can be something different, but sometimes you have to go the circuitous route. Hence the reason I became a technologist first and a very technical aspect of construction to study. And then I developed that further to become an architect.
Mm-hmm. And talking about making dreams come true, making visions come true, how would you describe the role of Dormacaba with making visions come true? If an architect like David has planned or designed something?
Oh, well, I mean, there's so many different areas of Dormacaba. From my end of it is, like, I mean, talking to the architect, specifically trying to get specification from the automatics end of it, and particularly, like, I mean, on a lot of it's the access to the buildings from revolving doors. And if I was to talk to David or to any architect, it's really to get in at the very early stages, pre-planning or planning, and just get to Dormacaba. Like, Dormacaba is thankfully has such a huge name worldwide, not just in Ireland or in England or in Europe, worldwide, and the name does absolutely open a lot of doors. Literally
and figuratively.
Yeah,
not intended.
But it is very important to have that early engagement, early conversation for both Jerry and for myself, because the getting the specification right, getting the right piece of ironmongery or door gear can make the difference. It's such a quality thing to have. So you have to get the right input from the right people.
Mm.
We as architects, we like to think we know kind of holistically everything, but we can't know everything. So sometimes you have to reach out to the experts and get some guidance and see how that dovetails into the rest.
Can you share an example where you had the vision, you had a reality check with one of Dormacaba's experts and were like, yeah, actually another way would be a better way. And you deviated from your original vision.
Well, it was more, I suppose, if I was to think of an example, I would say it's more of a development of an original idea.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes we're trying to think outside of a box, and we're trying to think of a special way to do something. But always in the back of our mind, we have constraints, and we have a realize, you know, you can't build an upside down pyramid, you know, so you have to work within the constraints sometimes of what you know, until you talk to somebody else and they say, actually, there are other possibilities. So mm-hmm. in terms of entrance doors, I, in one particular instance, wanted to have a very large piece of glazed entrance door. Mm-hmm. If we were to make, say, something that's accessible, you can't have one singular piece, I had thought, right? So we're going to break it down, and how do we make it work? Well, actually, a piece of ironmongery that could make that door one piece and make it a special opening section. So that's when you're looking at door gear, or when you're looking at a vision that you're trying to achieve, sometimes the early engagement, like we discussed, is about developing the design intent and how technically you can achieve that. So early engagement can really impact on the design as well.
Have you been working together on a project already?
With David's company now? No, not so much. But we've spoken, all right. We're just waiting for one. From my end of it, it's with the revolving doors and the swing door operators as well. But no, we haven't actually worked.
Not yet.
So sometimes it's about getting the right project too.
Yeah. And David's past life, in a former architectural practice, we have worked together. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I was with an architectural practice for 20 years outside, straight out of college into practice. And I was with them for 20 years. Mm-hmm. So during my career, my career development, I worked with Jerry on a number of projects. So it's about conversation, communication, about kind of getting all of the different component parts together, dovetailing it to make a wonderful project. And it does take everybody's input to make that work.
Well, yeah.
Brief announcement, ladies and gentlemen. As you might hear some sounds in the background, that's because the stadium is getting modernized and there's some construction work going on in the background. And the construction workers are doing their work and we're doing our work. So there might be some noises in the background, some voices as well, because you probably didn't notice. We heard you in the previous episode in the background as well.
Oh, really?
So that's how much fun you have on the other side of the windows. So, which is why I made the announcement in another episode, because we're recording multiple episodes, because this is a Brilliant. Dublin special, and we heard Excellent. You in another episode as well.
I hope you didn't pick up everything that we were talking about.
So now we have you in front of the camera.
I have been known to project.
So what is it like, I mean, with the huge amount of experience that both of you have, what is it like for you if you enter a building? What are the things that you notice about it?
Well, for me, I'd be walking in, obviously I would have my Dormacaba hat on and I walk in and the first thing, I had never thought I would see it be like that anyway.
Are you checking like, there's no Dormacaba?
I can tell you, the first thing I saw when I walked into Crow Park was, I won't say it wasn't Dormacaba, but it was, you know, I just noticed everything when you walk in. It looked from even hinges to the pull handles, to the sliding doors, to the actual operators that are being used, to the glazing. Everything, you know, so like, I mean, and it's just, you just can't get away from it. Like, I mean, it's, if I'm walking into Crow Park, if I'm walking into a restaurant, if I'm walking into somebody's house, or if I'm walking into a pub, anything like that, that's the first thing that I would just look at.
Or walking out of a pub.
if you remember.
Hopefully walking out. Sometimes it'd be a little bit, maybe not walking.
And can you remember an experience that you had when you entered any sort of venue or building and you were like amazed at what someone has built there? Hardware-wise, is there something you can share?
Off the top of my head, many a time I've walked in, I can that I've actually supplied to it, and I'd be very, very proud of it. You know, kind of going, I did that. Do you know what
that
I mean?
Was me.
Yeah, and then that's and it's great. Well, look, it's great to be able to sell and have the opportunity to sell, you know, whatever. But to actually be involved in the design end of it with the architect right from the outset. Then to go through everything all the way through to actual completion as well. That's, you do get a, sounds a bit corny, you know, but you do get a buzz from that. I get a buzz from it anyway, you know, to say, well, that, I did that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's great, you know. But thinking of one off the top of my head, You'll have to come back to me on that one. Let me think about it. Okay. David, you talk for a second. Down and someone will come back into my head.
That's great.
Now,
if you have two guests, you can talk to another one.
Well, there you go. Well, for me, I suppose it's about experiencing spaces, right? So when I approach or enter into a building, it's how am I appreciating it? How am I experiencing it? And the flow of it, the flow of the access, the ease of access is really helped or hindered by access control, right? So by door gear, by the entrance way and how that feels. So if you have a nice free-flowing action and user experience as you pass through into the entrance and so on, or transition through the building, it makes a huge difference because you don't have a restriction to appreciation of the space. You have an ease of flow, which is very important.
So when you think of designing or when you design buildings and you keep that in mind, you want to deliver or provide for the experience that people have. That you do you call them users or guests or people?
Well,
or how do you refer to them?
There are people. Everything is back to your own experience, and whether that's through tactile and physical feeling of a piece of ironmongery, whether it's the view of it and the vision of it, or the ability to see it in the first place for people who are visually impaired. It's the people's experience of the building and how they appreciate it that you have to think about. And I suppose that's really when I'm thinking about a building or designing an element of a building, it really is about visually appreciating how I would use that building. So and that's the way I look at it. And it is people. It's not users. It's not machines. It's the people. Mm-hmm. So and that's what you have to appreciate. That somebody who is not involved in architecture, someone who's not involved in ironmongery design, they're the ones who are going to appreciate the building. They may not know why, but they will.
Mm-hmm. So how do you design to make people's lives easier then?
So there's in terms of the user experience for a building, it's really about how you use it. You know, the comfortability of a door handle in your hand. That's why whenever I get door handle samples, for instance, you have to hold them. You have to use it. You have to feel how it is tactile. You have to use the action, you know, as you would do as a user, as a person entering into the building. So it's very important to get that feel, you know, and the material and the quality of the material and the quality of the craftsmanship is very important.
Mm. And now tying both of you together. Both of you work together, not both of you.
And a bit of socializing.
You're already
so very important.
If I imagine you have a vision, you want to improve people's lives, you design a building for that. What are typical questions or challenges, potential challenges that you are faced with then?
The challenge, well, first of all, would be one, can we do exactly, well, it wouldn't be exactly what David would want or the architect would want. And it's really just a sit down. You would quickly know if you can do it or not. Like, I mean, again, and I always go back to a team as well. The team that I have behind me are great from our project managers and everything like that as well. So I can always go back to them. Like, David could ask me a question, particularly at the design stage. And if I'm not too sure, we can just go back to the team itself and then we can go through. And if it is something that I felt that we couldn't do, in the back of my mind, I know that we probably can, you know, and we can, you know. So, but if David asks us a question, can you do it? I would always kind of go, yeah, we can. But, you know, we'll get the expertise from behind me as well. So, I mean, I don't know everything, you know, I try to know as much as I can, but yeah, we could go into the rest of the team then as well, and we'll be able to design something for David.
Mm. So you have the attitude of the can-do attitude, definitely.
Yeah, like, I mean, well, if you say no, I mean, then again, like, I mean, you can always walk with your feet, talk with your feet. But yeah, no, I would be a firm believer, like with the background from Dormer Cava, there's so many different areas that we can, and expertise, not just from the automatics, but from everywhere else as well, that you can bring it in. And yeah, from the factories in Germany, in Bulgaria, yeah, we can do it. We can absolutely do it.
And can you share a project where the challenges have challenged you on that attitude? Have you ever faced a difficulty where you're like, okay, maybe that's not feasible, but you still made it.
Yeah, actually, one, I won't mention the name now, we're working on right at this moment in time. And we weren't actually involved right at the very start of the design. I wasn't involved in the start of the design stage. The person who was involved had left, and I was left with the hassle. But it was
challenge.
The challenge. Thanks, David. Yeah.
It's all about work.
Absolutely. You know, just as well we know each other. So what happened? So what happened then was, like, I mean, we were told no, it can't be done, and it couldn't be done, and I just didn't leave it at that. I just kept on going back to our project manager, went further afield, went for myself then, like, I mean, we stopped at that, then went over to the UK, went over to Germany. Mm-hmm. And eventually you just, by keep on talking, then you talk to somebody and they'd say, why don't you contact somebody in Germany, which they did, and they came back. We went on Teams calls, and then I was able to go back to the architect, back to the client, and say, yes, we can actually do it. And right at this moment, today, our engineers are there, putting in the, it's a bifolding automatic door. So that's right hot off the press that we're doing it as well.
Success.
Well, it wasn't going to be able to be done, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. So next time you visit the venue, you were even prouder when you're sitting in front
absolutely,
of the doors.
Absolutely, yeah.
And the door's open.
I was meant to be there today, but no. So it'll be finished.
This is more important, of course.
Absolutely. It'll be finished Friday. So it was great. You know, so it was one of those, can be done.
And you still made it.
Yeah. Well, Dormer Cabot team did.
You and the team made it.
Okay, thanks very much.
Okay. So when are you going to be there?
Well, it should be finished on Friday. Obviously, then commissioning and that type of thing as well will be kind of sometime towards the end of next week.
Yeah. So both of you, you have the same goal. You want to create great experiences for people in buildings.
Yes.
You from the architectural perspective, you from the also safety and access perspective. How do you tie that together? I mean, ideally, I shouldn't, as a guest, as a person, shouldn't even notice that there are any access controls. How do you make that happen?
Well, the more you notice in terms of access, the less we have done our job, right? So it should be, and it goes back to ease of access into the building, and comfort, and user comfort.
And welcoming.
Yeah, absolutely. So the more open anything is, if there's no restrictions and the whole thing is open, you can free-flowly walk through, right? For security, for weather and all sorts of things, we have to add in some level of restriction or to close it down, and some obviously aesthetic reasons. But the ease of that opening, the ease of the transition through that threshold from the outside to inside, makes your experience either congested and slowed down and less enjoyable, or more open and more easy to go through, right? So the user experiences in terms of the ironmongery or in terms of the control systems within doors is very important, because that threshold is the line from your external experience of the building to your internal experience of the building. So that transition is what we got to get right. And the less you know of it, the more we've done our job.
We now have a special combination with both of you, because you are from that area, you're into the topic and into the industry as well, and you have decades of experience also with international projects. If there was one thing, or what is it that you can think of that you could bring from your international experience to Ireland, or maybe Dublin specifically, that you would wish to implement here for Irish communities when it comes to buildings and architecture?
I think on the continent, I find that they do hybrid spaces much better than we do here.
Mm-hmm.
So in Ireland, if you look out the window, things are a little bit grey, but and there's a reason why in Ireland we say you can get the four seasons in one day, and maybe 1 hour, as we have experience. But there's a wonderful kind of community sense that you get from the hybrid spaces in some design in on the continent, and that's the ability to have an outdoor space that sometimes we're not able to achieve here. But I would love to kind of revisit how we might establish some of those types of spaces in Ireland. And that kind of comes to the kind of people's experience of the building and elongating that threshold from the outside space onto the inside space. And it softens it, and it makes it a much more enjoyable experience. So you're not just meeting a singular barrier, which is controlled by Dormakaba or Windows Systems. It's more of a bleed, and it's more of a relaxed transition into a building. So that's something that I think I'd like to investigate more, discover more about mm-hmm. how we might introduce that into Ireland.
Where did you experience that kind of fluid transition into
a lot Ireland? In the south of France and mm-hmm. in north of Spain, we see it a lot. I travel a fair bit in Montpellier and around that area down around south France, and I've recently visited the Guggenheim in Bilbao, which has some wonderful spaces, and that's kind of the thinking. And the types of spaces that I think we should try to investigate more how we might implement here in Ireland. Yeah.
Jerry, have you ever walked into a building somewhere else internationally and you were like, oh, we need more of that in Ireland?
Yeah, I have. Like, I mean, it's just going over to, say, in America. You walk mm-hmm. in and it's completely, well, it's not completely different, but
How would you describe the experience of walking there?
It's been a few years since I've been over there, probably about 4 or 5 years. But even then, like, you just see everything is just on a kind of a larger scale. It's just so much bigger as well. And, you know, some of the technology I hadn't seen then, like 4 or 5 years ago, I see it now, but they're just that little bit kind of more advanced mm-hmm. in terms of the... You know, ironmongery, the automatic doors and that type of thing as well. Mm. It's just, you just walk in, you're kind of, oh, wow, you know, and, you know, that's the memory that will come to me anyway straight away, you know, particularly in the last time I was in New York, you know, it's so much bigger and, you know, and it's where you'd see, say, in Dublin itself, like, I mean, where we're revolving doors, there are quite a few revolving doors, but you just go into Manhattan and it's just every single, you're kind of going, oh my God, can you imagine being a salesperson here? You'd be, you know, your job would be great, you know, you'd be a millionaire.
How empathetic of yours.
Absolutely, you know, you always have to look at that, you know, but it's just, again, it's a lot bigger.
You told us so much, so beautifully about buildings, how people experience it, and that the transition from outside to inside should just, you said, bleed into each other.
Well, you'd find that in a lot of the likes of churches and mosques in particular, actually, they have transition spaces, right? Mm-hmm. So you have your soft spaces outside where communities and people, they gather before they go into the business end of things. But you're elongating and you're softening that transition. Your experience of a building as you use it begins before you get to it. So on approach, you're going to travel through an experience before you get to a front door, which might be compressed, which might be opened up. So, and it's determined by what type of feeling you want to create within the person who's going to come to the building, and then their destination within the building. So they're going to have a journey within that building, and how you experience that journey is determined by many things: what you see, what you feel, what you smell, how you touch items as you go through the building. So it's very important to have all of the various different senses tingled to have that experience. And very much so, what you touch a lot in buildings is ironmongery, right? How you transition from a compressed to an open space is through a door or through something that's moving. Do you have to touch it? Not always. You just have to present yourself to it. So these are different things that we have to consider when we're looking for our experience, what type of experience that we want. So I would say every building can have its own different type of experience. And that might be just something small as you move around, or it could be something really grand and vast, but it's created by something compressed that we designed together before you transition into mm-hmm. that. Understand? Yeah.
You seem to experience buildings on a sensory level a lot,
yeah.
Probably above average compared to other people.
Maybe.
If we wanted to design and build a building that was more people-centered, maybe David-centered, what would it have to feature then?
It would have to feature a lot. It's funny, the answer to what should a building have great access visually to the outside, right? So although we want to be in comfortable areas, they've got to be, in terms of our physical comfort, they've got to be well lit. So light, access to light, internally coming from the outside to in, and then access visually from inside to out is very important, that transition, that visual relief. I mean, the building and how what we're using it for, so purpose is very important, of course, in a building. So if we're looking at art galleries, what have we got to do, right? That's a user experience like the Guggenheim. Is a piece of art that contains art. So how we feel in that building is different within each gallery. How the art is expressed and how it's shown in each gallery is different again. How you transition between each gallery is an experience in itself. And then you have your gathering milling zones where you can talk and where you can enjoy and where you can relax from kind of that visual, I suppose, congestion or a visual impact that you get when you're in galleries. So my experience of the building, it depends on what its purpose is, right? But in all cases, the use of light and our views inside to out are hugely important.
What would it be for you to make a building Jerry-centered or people-centered from your perspective?
A Jerry-centered building.
Jerry-centered building, yeah.
I'm interested to hear what this is going to be now, to be honest.
Colourful.
Colourful.
Absolutely. Uh-huh. Plenty of light. Obviously, automatic doors from the out when I'm walking up to it. Okay, on the practical side of as well, sustainability with from the inside, you know, keeping, you know, the sound out from the outside in, keeping the heat in the building and that type of thing as well. But yeah, I mean, all sorts. Like, I mean, again, these are all questions that I would be asked as well from in terms of specification, that type of thing. What we're looking for is, you know, we want to to keep the doors closed as long as possible. Mm-hmm. Is there a function that you have when you're walking up to the door until you actually come to that it'll actually read that you want to go out into the building, not just walk past the building, so the doors will stay closed, so you're keeping the heat in, keeping the noise out, keeping, you know, the air out and that type of thing as well, you know. So there's an awful lot of things that I would like to see in a building that if it was a Jerry building coming up to it, you know. And probably the Dublin colours, you know, blue and navy.
Let's see if we can make that happen. And gentlemen, I would like to look into the future with both of you. Let's say 10 years ahead. What do buildings have to provide to be of service to people? What might be future challenges? What are features that buildings need to provide for people in 10 years future?
I suppose I would think that the buildings from cave to now are providing us with homes, places of comfort, places to shelter. They'll always do that, right? But they have added importance, and how we achieve the building and how we get there more and more is becoming, it's important to use sustainable materials. It's important to look at everything in a life cycle from cradle to grave in a very sustainable way, to see how we can use every input into a building to make sure that it can be reused, that we don't have waste. And these are very important things that when I'm speaking to Jerry, to look at component parts and the sustainable way that they're produced and the material itself and how that might be used at the end of its life. So they're all very important parts, and sustainability is a huge factor in buildings going forward, absolutely. Mm.
Yeah, 10 years, it's coming around very quickly. So, I mean, for on the building end of it, what I can see in 10 years, like, I mean, in terms of aesthetically, everything looks very, very pleasing, but, you know, it'll be all automatics. You know, you might have a door handle, you won't have any need to use a door handle. It'll be all wave sensors. Mm-hmm. And there are, like, wave sensors there as well. It's just really kind of bringing everything in terms of, you know, kind of just updating everything. The quality is that little bit better. Yeah, actually, a lot of what David is saying, I would actually agree with. You know,
we didn't rehearse this.
No. We certainly did not rehearse it.
But other people can tell that you've known each other a lot for a long time already, and that you like each other a lot. Yeah.
Which is say great. That. Don't tell anybody.
Yeah. We won't disclose.
We actually don't like each other at all.
But you get
that's
it pretending.
That's the Irish way.
Yeah. As soon as the camera's turned off, we'll be giving out each other. You know?
Gentlemen, what is a building or a venue that is still on your bucket list that you still would like to visit that you haven't visited yet? Anywhere in the world? For whatever reason, it could be for the doorknobs, for the facade, for the architecture, a building that's still on your bucket list. Any kind of.
So the building that I would love to go and visit and experience is the Sagrada Familia in Barcelona. It's coming to a state now where it's nearly finished after maybe 150 odd years of construction.
Yeah.
I've seen some pictures of it and some of the inside, and it seems like a wonderful building that you would experience, that you would get some lovely experiences in various different sensors. So I think the Sagrada Familia jumps out. It was the first thing that popped into my mind when you said it. And I definitely would love to go and see it.
Yeah, Sagrada Familia in Barcelona for you.
You're going to laugh. I was going to say that. But I will go
we
a little
bit. Together.
Yeah. But it was, okay.
That's it. We can leave the wives behind.
Yeah. Well, I've never been there before, but the Sydney Opera House, just because it's...
The Sydney Opera House.
Yeah. Why? I don't know. It's just something I've always wanted to visit, and I've never been to Australia, and it's just something I would love to see, just that building itself, you know. It's just iconic in terms of
every time you see it. Absolutely,
you know, and that's it. You know, I laughed when you were saying it was 150 years in making. You know, it's nearly like, as an Irish joke, our children's hospital is probably about that long it's been taken to be built. Still hasn't opened yet, and about 7-8 years later?
It'll get there,
you know. It's next year.
Always next year.
No, yeah. Don't make it next year. But we happen to have someone who just recently traveled to both places, like Barcelona and to Australia.
Oh, really?
Excellent.
I will introduce you to her. Excellent. She can give you pro tips. Do you know what the entry fee is for the Sagrada Familia?
I don't. You're going to
make a guess.
40 euro.
75.
Euros.
Just to get you emotionally ready for that experience. So you enjoy it even more.
So I had the kids with me when I went to the Guggenheim.
You just leave.
I won't bring the kids.
Just look from the outside.
And I say thank you, David. Thank you, Jerry, for being my guest at the Because It Matters podcast here in Dublin at the Croke Park as a special episode of the Dublin series. We hope that you enjoyed this episode as well. And of course, keep in mind to listen to or watch the other episode as well. And have a fantastic day. See you soon.
That was Because It Matters, a Dor Macabre podcast. New episodes every month wherever you can listen to a podcast and on dormacabre.com.